Welcome to The Leadership Mindset, the podcast where we uncover the hidden gems of sales and business leadership. In each episode, our goal is to bring you up close and personal with the world's most accomplished business leaders. We explore their experiences, motivations, inspirations, and the challenges they've conquered on their way to the top. In today's episode, you can expect to learn about the transformative power of personal ambition, emotional intelligence, and strategic career planning in achieving leadership success, as illustrated by my guest's journey from aspiring entrepreneur to becoming a key figure in corporate sales. So grab a coffee and enjoy the conversation with today's guest, Jack Hanratty. Jack Hanratty, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Paul. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure, Jack. When I was snooping on your LinkedIn profile, I came across a quote somebody left for you as a recommendation, and it jumped out at me. And what it said was, when Jack became my manager, I remember the first thing he told our team was about his personal transformation. And that got my attention. What was your personal transformation?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great starting point, because it's something that I talk to all new hires or anybody that I work with, is how I think about my career and therefore their careers. When I was growing up, Paul, I was always very inspired by my dad and his story. And he was an entrepreneur and had fallen into becoming an entrepreneur at a very young age. His old man had passed away when he was 17. And he was basically charged with running the family business, which was quite a successful lighting business, commercial lighting business. And didn't get the opportunity to go to university and became very successful. And so successful that he was able to bring us up in a lovely environment. We went to great schools and made great friends. And I was always very inspired by my dad. And therefore, this idea of becoming an entrepreneur. I wasn't excited about working in lighting, Paul, if I'm being totally honest. So I said I wouldn't go down that route, but I definitely would follow the entrepreneurial route. And so I found myself in university working. I worked at a stockbroker's for a year and realized that it was interesting. And I got a taste for sales there. But definitely one thing that I really look for when I'm thinking about my career and thinking about my moves, and we can talk about this later, is doing something very meaningful and having an impact. And I just didn't feel like I was doing that in stockbroking. People may feel differently, but that's just the way I felt. And so after leaving stockbroking, I went back to university. It was an internship and I had a business idea. And that business idea was actually spurred from being in the company that I was working for. And I went off and I tried to build a business, but I was 19 or maybe 20 and I hadn't a clue what I was doing. I was very naive. I managed to get in front of some pretty inspiring business leaders at the time. And they told me, Jack, look, you're too young. You've great ideas, but you should go and get some experience. And so that was a big learning moment for me, Paul, in terms of how I thought about my career and what I wanted to achieve. And there was this fundamental kind of belief inside me that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and that kind of transpired into I wanted to be a CEO, right? And so I knew that I wanted to be a CEO or an MD or my own boss, ultimately, was where I wanted to go. And I began working in a small Irish company called Blueface, which has become a very successful company now. They were acquired by Comcast last year. And I fell into sales, Paul. Like, I was hired by my previous boss in the stockbroking company, and he said, look, come in and let's figure out what you want to do. And I was very fortunate. It was a true startup. Like, I brought my own laptop to the company. It was a true startup. And I fell into sales, and I realized that I really liked sales. And at the time, I was there about a year, and I was learning a lot, but I had decided at that point that what I needed to do was build a real career in sales, and I needed to build a strong network. And at the time, LinkedIn were opening their offices in Dublin. I was actually driving. It was like the time of radio ads that were relevant, and I was driving my car, and LinkedIn were opening this office, and there was big excitement, and I love LinkedIn. I just saw the value of it. I was using it to sell already. And so I joined LinkedIn as an entry-level salesperson. And I set out to do a couple of things, Paul, with this like longer-term ambition that I want to become a CEO. And so I said, typically, what do CEOs look like? And so they typically, if you look at the top Fortune 500 companies, they'll either come from a finance background. So that's definitely not going to be me. or they come from a sales background. And so I said, my objective is to become really good at sales and to use sales as a platform to go wherever I want, right? And that's, I think, what that recommendation is talking about. It's this opportunity to see sales as a place to start, because as better than anybody, Paul, we're all selling. When I was running a graduate program for LinkedIn, I used to go and speak at universities and talk about, I used to ask the crowd, who in this room has asked their professor for an extension on their projects this year? And everybody would put up their hand. And I would be like, that's because you're selling them on the vision of why you should get that extension. And so I saw the opportunity to move into sales and grow through sales. So I did very well in sales. I worked my way up through the SDR function into sales, became a top selling rep globally, which was great. But I knew that I didn't want to stay there forever and that there was other things that I needed to add to my belt, other notches that I needed to add to my belt in order to become the CEO that I wanted to become down the road. And so I had this opportunity to move into our sales operations department, running the graduate program that I mentioned. And that was a phenomenal opportunity to learn the importance of talent and kind of get an understanding of where I was weaker, right? Which was the operational side, right? If we think about the insights discovery wheel or Myers-Briggs or something like that, yeah, I, as you can probably tell, I'm quite a yellow visionary. I like to talk a lot and I wasn't so strong at the data or some of that elements. And so I wanted to go and learn that piece because I knew that was another piece of the jigsaw that wasn't being filled. So went and did that, realized, and it was successful, but realized at the same time that I missed a number. I missed having a number to aim for. And so I was like, I love working with talent. I love developing talent. I love managing people, but I want to have a number. I want to have something to aim for. So I went and moved back to sales leadership. And then that end destination changed from being a CEO to more of like a VP of sales, a CRO, but the end destination is still ultimately the same. It's just the title changes ever so slightly. So basically, that long story short, I know I've just waffled on for a couple of minutes, but long story short, Paul, I think it's important that people think about the long-term destination. And that might be, I want to own a cafe, right? I want to own a film studio, whatever that might be. How can you use the moments that you're in right now to develop the skills that will make you the best cafe owner that there ever was? And I genuinely believe that sales is the best platform or the best starting point to do that. So yeah, that's typically how I think about it.
Great. I've got so much there I want to talk to you about. For a point of clarification, though, when you said to me, I'm yellow, when I grew up, for those who are not familiar with the color system, yellow meant you were a coward. We used to use that. Anybody, he's yellow.
Some people might say that about me too. But...
and for those who've done DISC, yellow equates to the influencer type personality. So just in case anybody, what did he mean when he was yellow? Yeah. What is it about the CEO thing that motivates you, that attracts you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I suppose at the time, because I was young and naive and entrepreneur, like that destination of being an entrepreneur was my aspiration. I suppose I looked at a CEO as being that person, right? The founder, the owner of the business, responsible for everything. I suppose that's just the way I've been wired, Paul. When growing up, because I looked at my dad as this inspiration, I always looked at an opportunity to find my own way to make money, right? I never really had a job. I ran soccer camps. I had a Christmas tree delivery company. And my vision of being the boss was that. And so ultimately, this idea of being a CEO was what I thought I wanted to be. And as I mentioned, as I moved into the world, the proper commercial world, I realized actually CEO is quite a difficult job with their hands in a lot of different parts of the business. But to be perfectly honest, I don't think I have the capacity to do that. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I think what's most important about that story that I've just told is that I had the opportunity to learn about where I was stronger and weaker and where I wanted to place my bets in the future. And so that kind of destination of being a CEO is no longer an aspiration. Maybe one day, depends on where I end up, but it's more about delighting customers and generating revenue for a business and helping transform people's lives. That's what I want to do with my life. And I have that opportunity to do that as a sales leader.
So it's not so much about the role, but maybe about a sense of autonomy and being in a position to make your own decisions and be accountable for those, which is what business gives you.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of describing it, for sure.
Yeah. It you said something else as well about your father's influence on you, and it's something that's come out in a number of podcasts I've done with male sales leaders specifically, where they've mentioned the impact their father has on them. How important do you think it is, that male role model, for people growing up into the adult world where they're going to take on adult responsibilities, whatever they choose, whether it's working in a corporate environment or developing their own business?
Yeah, it's a great question. Let me try and unpack that a little. Yeah, my old man has been an incredible influence, as has my mother. I've been very fortunate that both parents were very at the forefront of my life. I think the influence that your dad has on you is, let me try and articulate this correctly. I think ultimately my dad was just always my kind of influence. I played a lot of sport, Paul, when I was young, and my dad was excellent at sport, and he ended up becoming the coach of my team for a couple of years, and so naturally I was already inspired by him. And he used to talk about how successful he was at sport and how sport was able to make him successful in business, and so I would hear these stories and I was inspired by that. And I also love music, and my dad loves music as well. So there was many different kind of avenues that my dad would inspire me. So I think that the greatest strength that my dad has is his emotional intelligence and his ability to adapt to different types of people. And I learned that just by watching him as my coach and as he interacted with my friends. And people to this day still say to me, Jack, your dad had this like incredible impact on my life. And you probably don't even realize it. He took me aside and he had a chat with me, and I was going through a really tough time. And the fact that he was just able to pick up on that, I think, is amazing. And I had that opportunity to be close to that. And that probably is why that emotional intelligence is something that I picked up on, and it's something that I've leaned into quite heavily as a salesperson, and then secondly as a sales leader, in terms of like how to do business and how to sell to people, buy from people. I genuinely believe that. But I also think that in order to get the best from people, if you can understand what their true motivation is as a leader and to really tap into your emotional intelligence side, you can get the best out of people. Not every time, but more often than not. And so to circle back, how important was my dad's influence on me? I don't think he realizes how significant his impact was on me, and the fact that he was around to have that, and I was so fortunate to have him around to do that, was incredible. And I am who I am because of him.
Yeah, no, I think it's important. And I tell you why and you mentioned mothers too, is that I don't think there's any question about the impact our mothers have on us. But fathers can often step in and step out of that, yeah, where mothers very rarely do. Most people, their mothers are hugely important part of their lives. And you mentioned CEO, and very often it's a sacrifice some fathers make and are not part of their children's lives to the same extent. And I think that's a huge shame. And I'm often curious about it myself, because with my own father, he died when I was 20. And I don't think I ever really got to know him, and that he was a carpenter. But interestingly, when he was in his mid-30s, he did this conversion course to being a woodwork teacher. So as I grew up, I only ever knew him as that. But he'd often be gone early in the morning, because where he worked was quite a distance away, and he used to do night classes because his career was late. He had to make up pensions, and so he would do a lot of night classes. And I didn't see him a lot, except, of course, summer holidays, which were different with teachers. Then he was there all the time.
Of course.
But it was interesting because I might have been maybe 10, 12, thereabouts. And I remember he went on this Dale Carnegie course, which was highly unusual at the time in Ireland. I'm going back maybe late 70s, early 80s. And personal development wasn't a thing. It's only now really becoming a thing. But I remember, he used to go every night, every Thursday night, and he'd drive from Kilkenny to Port Leash. Again, in those days, back roads, no motorways. And in the middle of winter. And I remember him bringing home the Dale Carnegie books, How to Win Friends and Influence People, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, and Public Speaking. There were three books, which two of them I still have and treasure here somewhere. And I remember reading them. But it was his transformation which had a massive impact on me, because he was just this ordinary guy, very traditional in terms of his value sets,
never traveled outside the country, but was just always there in the background. And but it was interesting watching his transformation as a person by going through that. And I think that had a huge impact in terms of my choices, and but also belief sets and value sets in terms of growth, that change is possible, that it's good if it's put to the right use. And I think if he hadn't have been there, then maybe I'd have been on a different path. So I do think it's important. And I tried to do that for my own kids as well. And I think it's, we don't talk about it enough in terms of the impact a fathers have. Both, on both daughters and sons. I'm not, it's not a gender thing. It's just more about them being aware of the, that impact is far more important than going out and working long hours so you can have a bigger house.
Totally agree. Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose that is, that's something that actually my wife and I talk about quite a lot. The most important thing in life is your happy family, right? And that's ultimately why I do what I do. I think what's interesting about where I work and kind of the industry that I now work in, Paul, is that fathers are given a much more kind of front row seat in their children's lives. And I'm incredibly passionate. If it came to my career versus my kids, I would choose my kids all day long. I don't think anybody would say any different, but they're the most important thing in my lives, in my life and my wife's life and in our lives. And what's great about where I work, and I think the industry that we work in, generally speaking, is that companies are beginning to recognize that. And so you may have read, I wrote a blog about this recently, at Asana, we get 4 months paternity leave as a father, which is pretty unheard of. When I was joining Asana, I had previously worked at LinkedIn where I got 6 weeks, which was incredible. And actually, I remember having a conversation with a colleague of mine who started at LinkedIn 7 years prior. And he said, Christ, Jack, like I got 3 days and you're getting 6 weeks. And then I went to Asana and I got 4 months. And actually, I got so much, Paul, that I've only taken a portion of it, and I'm going to take another part of it this summer, which is going to be great because I get this opportunity now to not only spend and bond at the beginning of Tom, my second child's life, but also now that he's growing up and I can be a part of his kind of further development and allow my wife to go back to work and we don't have to worry about creche and all those other things. But I suppose where you're probably going with this is that the impact that we have by being around is we probably don't realize the impact that it's having because we're only now beginning to have that opportunity to be there. And second to that is now that we live in this kind of unusual world where we're all at home all the time, I have this amazing opportunity to like get up with my 2 kids every morning. I get to bring my daughter Margot to school every day. I get to have lunch with my family where I used to be running from one meeting to another and maybe I would grab a Sambo in the cafe in the office and I get to have dinner and I can help out and my kids will realize how great that opportunity has been for them in terms of their development because I the opportunity for me has been enormous and I appreciate it every day. Not just, honestly, there's a lot of terrible things that are going on in the world right now, but if you look at the silver lining for me is that I've been able to really build these phenomenal bonds with my family. And then by virtue of the incredible pat leave that I get at Asana, I get to really cement that bond. And those first couple of years, Paul, is better than anybody. So formative. And so being around to help influence their development is a huge opportunity.
It's not called pat leave because you're Irish, is it?
Or mick leave.
I'm curious that I think obviously for a long time, it's been an expectation. And in some cases, my wife was one of them where it was the desire. She wanted to stay at home and be the primary care for her kids. Again, that was entirely her choice. And she was in a job where it was a choice for her. However, I think the fact that more men now are taking on that is an entirely good thing. I absolutely love the times I have with my kids. But what I love nothing more, and I get to see it nowadays where I wouldn't have ever seen it before, is where I've got a class and it's a Zoom call. And there's 20 thumbnails on this monitor in front of me. And I'll see a guy there attending the class, bouncing a little kid on his lap. And he's apologizing for the fact that he had a kid there. And I'm thinking, stop apologizing. This is fantastic. It's brilliant to see it. Absolutely brilliant. And so it becomes normalized through that. Yeah. And therefore, the more we see it, the more it just becomes normal. So the first time I saw it, I noticed it. Now it's just background noise. It's noise is the wrong word. It's just background. And it doesn't matter. I now don't notice the difference whether it's a male or female with a child on their lap. It's just a parent. That's it. And I think we've got to get to that sooner rather than later. But I do want to talk to you, and you wouldn't be human, or I think we're on the cusp of this, so maybe you'll tell me I'm wrong, is that when you're offered 4 months, and in Scandinavia it's even longer, right? Mm-hmm. Or some Scandinavian countries at least, was there any sense of trepidation in your mind? Not about the spending more time with your family. I can't imagine that. But in terms of what does it mean in terms of work? What am I going to miss out on? Because that's always been, I'm going to say excuse, but it's a genuine fear.
Yeah.
I think career-minded men in particular had. And it's always been a gripe for women to say, look, this expectation is on our shoulders. That's not fair either. I just wanted to understand that from your perspective. What were some of those things that went through your head, even momentarily, that went, ooh, I don't know about this?
Yeah, it's a great question, Paul. Let me answer this in a couple of different ways. So the first is initial kind of feeling or doom, if you like, of stepping away, right? So in both instances, at LinkedIn and Asana, then afterwards, I stepped away for 6 weeks. And the first time I was doing it, I actually remember having a conversation with somebody about, are you worried about what people will think of you going away for that amount of time? And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, I having a very frank conversation, been like, yeah, no, I am. So there's this, and to be perfectly honest, while I don't really, you talked about Dale Carnegie, stop worrying, and I don't really worry about what people think, but this is the first time in my life where I've been given this opportunity, which is very exciting on one hand, but on the other hand, concerning, if you like, in terms of how does the ship keep sailing? Will everything be okay? And so I suppose first and foremost, I definitely felt that feeling of doom. And that was kind of the initial feeling before you do it. There's another feeling that you feel afterwards, which is when you come back, which is, and I imagine this is how women feel after they go back after 6 months, which is, it's like, God, did anybody miss me? Am I actually adding any value here? Because you come back and everything is, the ship is sailing. And I think what's important is in terms of making sure that you create that comfort within yourself, but also in your company. And that's why companies like LinkedIn and Asana, then secondly, have created this amazing culture, is that you first and foremost, as a leader, you have comfort in the team that you've hired, right? And so if you've hired really well, you know that the team will continue to execute and actually probably try and execute even at a higher level by virtue of the fact that you're not there. I think you have that feeling, you come back and that has been proven, and so you have further confidence that you can then step away and do it again a second time, which is what I will do this year. I'll take part two is what I'm calling my second part of my pat leave. But also it's about the environment that the company creates. And interestingly, at the time I was taking my paternity leave, we had just got a new general manager for EMEA who came in. He was literally just in the door 4 weeks, and people were saying to me, oh, maybe you should only take a couple of weeks. It's probably not the best idea. You won't get that opportunity to build a relationship. First thing he said to me was like, Jack, take as long as you want. Go and do whatever you have to do. This is the most important. Like, and he said, you know, this place doesn't really matter. The most important thing is that your family, you prioritize your family. And if you need to take 6 weeks or 12 weeks, that's entirely up to you. And I fully trust that you are taking that time. And so that doesn't just happen because he's a great guy. That happens because Asana thinks about hiring these types of people and this culture very seriously. And so I'll be very grateful to Simon and to my boss and to Asana for creating that environment and giving me that comfort level to be able to move out for 6 weeks. And interestingly, Paul, what it allowed him to do was build a relationship with my team that he probably wouldn't have had that opportunity to do. And so he got a really good exposure to my managers and therefore their teams. And I think it was overall a really great thing. But I suppose to close out, yeah, I had this conversation with another guy who just come back from his part two of pat leave. And he's gone through this similar feeling again, where he's like, God, have I, am I adding value? Do people miss me? But they do. And I suppose if I can give anybody the advice, if you're concerned about taking that time, take it. You'll never get that opportunity back.
And yeah. I wonder, is there something else though as well? I think if we look at the pressures that society have put on both men and women, in a traditional sense, society is always, in terms of, expectation and pressure, was always on women to look good, right? And if anybody argues with me on that, just look at the fashion and the makeup industry and the amount of money that's spent on that, the amount of influencers that exist in that space.
It's crazy.
That's the evidence, right? It exists, whether we like it or not. I think there's a corollary of that for men, which is the expectation to be provider.
Yeah.
And our identity is tied up in that. And we have no alternative role to that. And therefore, a lot of people, again, tie up their own self-worth and their own value in how well I am perceived to be doing as a provider. And that ties in then to getting on the corporate ladder and climbing that. Because that's their way of being a better version of what society expects them to be.
Totally.
And I don't know that we'll ever crack that nut of people being 100% comfortable taking full paternity leave and getting to the Scandinavian world. Because even in Scandinavia, they've had to make it mandatory by law for men to take that time off. Because even though they were given it, they weren't doing it. And people were going, they're being unfair. And it's not. It's a societal expectation of what it means to be a man. And until that changes in terms of how society values that role, I don't think people will feel that comfortable about it. And organizations will struggle as much as... And it was interesting, your boss, and it's, to me, that's the mark of a great leader as well, is somebody, even though they may have their own... Somebody taking time off is going to cause them problems, because now they have to find somebody else who's going to backfill that and somebody else with experience. But they're able to put their own needs aside and they're able to come to you and say, take as much time as you want. I had that myself with one of my kids was born very early, 24 weeks, £1.10
ounce. Wow.
Mature. Yeah. So was it, and I was working at Motorola at the time. This was back in the late 90s. And my boss said to me, Paul, he says, take as much time as you want.
Amazing.
And two things. One is, what a relief, first of all. Secondly, that builds massive loyalty, because at the time you need that most, they're there for you. And I think people miss that out. They just see it as a more of a transaction rather than a way of building deep loyalty.
Yeah, totally. And loyalty is more important now than ever. Oh, when we work in an industry that is so, for want of a better word, there's so much opportunity and so many different places that are vying for your attention. It's easy to go to the next thing because they're giving you a bit more money, or they're saying their culture is even better than the other place before. And so these moments, you're absolutely dead right. These are what build culture. These are what make you retain top talent. And I will be forever grateful to Asana and to Simon and to my team for enabling me to do that. But to your point around the societal norms, absolutely. No matter whether it's the man or female, we do have these expectations of us. And I actually remember when I was having my first child, I remember going through this kind of, I suppose most of us probably have done, but I talked to my pals about this quite a lot, where I went through this moment of, oh, all of a sudden now I'm like, I'm going to be a dad. And, you know, about a year ago, kind of the only person that really mattered was me. Right? And now all of a sudden I'm like stack ranked. I'm third in the stack ranking. It's my child, my wife, and now me. And so, you know, society tells you that you need to be this provider. And I went into this kind of mindset that like, I need to be a provider and I can't make any mistakes now anymore. And I need to bring home the paycheck every month. And I need to help us be able to provide for our kids for the future and go to university, all that sort of stuff. The onus in order to change those societal norms, Paul, in my opinion, is people like us, right? It's people like us working in these environments, telling people that it is okay. And actually the science backs it up, Paul.
Yeah.
The time away, the time spent, and I don't have the data in front of me right now, but it's very clear that giving people that opportunity to recharge is so important, not just from a loyalty standpoint, but it also reduces burnout, which we know is a huge problem nowadays, right? Like, people are overworking, they're working later hours than they ever have, they're working harder than they ever have. And so giving people and telling people that it's okay, and that to try and challenge the norms that we become used to, it's up to us, and it's up to our leading industries to go and do that.
Yeah, I think as you're talking about that, something popped into my mind, which was, I think men need to do two things. One is to change the meaning of provider from being a provider of income into the household, because that was the traditional view, to being a provider of time, love, and affection.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
And then to find partners who value that.
Yeah.
Because that's all that kids need. That's all that they want. No normally adjusted kid ever said, I wish my parents gave me the latest PlayStation or Xbox. It was, I wish they were at home. My dad was at home to kick a football with me, or I had more time with my parents together around the kitchen table at night rather than... It's just so many scenarios in which it is just that. It's that time to love and support each other and the kids. And if you do that, I think we'll crack this for sure.
Yes. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
Tell me about your transition from sales to sales leadership. That's always an interesting one for me. It's not something I was ever comfortable with in my own career. And I'm curious to know, what were some of the bumps along the road for you in terms of areas that you thought you'd be fine, and then you realized, oh, this is a very different role and you needed to develop new skills?
Yeah, it's a great question. I suppose I was fortunate enough to move into leadership in this kind of stepping stone manner. And so what I mean by that is I had the opportunity to go and build a graduate program for LinkedIn. So that was the first kind of exposure that I had to managing people. So I didn't carry a number at that time, Paul, but I obviously had other responsibilities. But I think for me, the biggest shift was going from being an individual contributor to now having to think about very different people and different skills, different requirements, different needs, and similarly, like, how do you hire for that? One of the greatest kind of learnings that I got from moving into that world was the importance of building diverse teams, and it's not a good idea to hire 5 jacks, right? Because that's not going to help your team or your business win. And so I got this really very quick exposure to understanding that I want to hire, the team needs this type of person. And it was more about the additions to a team as opposed to the fit of the team. So I really had to lean into this piece that I talked about earlier on, which is like the emotional intelligence and understanding how to first and foremost hire these types of people and understand what is important to them. And then importantly, hiring is 20% of the job. It's how do you get the best out of that person once they come in? So I had this opportunity then to go and build that. So moving into sales leadership, I had already learned a lot of that. And then it was about applying my sales knowledge on top of hiring great people or trying to transform great people's careers and then apply those skills. The other biggest learning for me, Paul, at that point was, and I had a great sales director, Paul Terry, who used to talk about salespeople are calculators or dancers. And I would say I was probably more of a dancer type of salesperson. I would engage with people and I would build a relationship. And as we both probably know, sales is becoming more and more of a science. And so I really had to lean into the science part of sales. And that was not hugely comfortable to me at the time. I probably was a little biased in my thinking that great salespeople are designed this way. And so I had to had an opportunity to lean in and understand the importance of being scientific about your approach. And as a result, I became a kind of a more all-rounded sales leader. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge. The other piece that you learn very quickly is the importance of managing up and across. You probably don't have to interact with senior leadership or with your cross-functional stakeholders anywhere near as much as you do as a sales leader. Great sales leaders are doing that all the time, right? They're consistently communicating, probably over-communicating with their senior people and then across the business to promote both themselves and their team. And so that was probably the third big lesson that I had to lean into and develop over time. So yeah, it's definitely a change, but something that I wanted. I think first and foremost, you have to want it because it's a very different job. Salesperson is a very different job to being a salesperson, where you're carrying a book, you're worried about yourself, you're basically just solving customers' problems. Now all of a sudden you're solving your team's problems, you're solving your boss's problems, you're solving your cross-functional stakeholders' problems, all at the same time, whilst trying to solve your customers' problems too. But if you're motivated by wanting to do that, then it's the best place to be.
You mentioned something about hiring for potential in that blog you wrote, which was interesting. You said you were hired for potential. It wasn't necessarily, there were certain experiences that you didn't have, but they saw that you had the right mindset to grow into that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that often interests me, because people, when they're hiring, can often look for, have they done the job before? And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. How important is prior experience in a particular role versus potential to grow into that?
Yeah, it's, again, but it's a really interesting question, because I think it depends. I think it depends on the stage that the company is at, Paul. So if I think about when I joined Asana at the time, so there was probably two motivations. There was my motivation and there was the company's motivation. My motivation at the time was, I had talked to my boss about this. He was very clear that what I wanted to do was go and be my own boss one day, and whether that is a CRO or whatever. But the story I want to be able to tell is that I can help start and scale sales teams. And I had done that at LinkedIn, and I had proven that to myself. And so I wanted to go and prove that again somewhere else, just to prove that it wasn't a fluke, and also make myself a little bit more attractive in the market, but, and then help other companies go and achieve that. So that was my aspiration, right? And that was my motivation. The motivation for Asana at the time was to go and build out an EMEA sales team. And so I suppose that the timing was right there, in terms of they hired me for the potential. I was able to sell my motivation and somewhat of my experience. I had managed teams, while I hadn't managed multiple teams, and I hadn't managed managers. And so that was where they were hiring for potential and not the experience. As I think about how that applies now, when I was first hiring AEs into Asana, we were more often than not hiring for the potential, because it is a very entrepreneurial type of, it was a very entrepreneurial type of company at that time. And whether that person had been a successful enterprise AE at XYZ company didn't really matter, because it's a very different job now to the job that they're doing today here, right? Where they have to become an SDR again and be happy to do that, but to be passionate about wanting to build something. So I think nowadays, or the potential still runs through, Paul, but I think as the company matures, the requirement to have some of that experience is probably a little bit more necessary as you become more focused on developing region, role specific, if you like.
It's funny, because the guy who hired me into Motorola, I wasn't his first choice. I know that he had offered the job to two other people before he got around to me.
Everything happens for a reason, Paul.
It's interesting, because I was working in England at the time, and the role was to be based in Ireland, and he was based in near London, in the Motorola office there, and they'd offered it to people from England, English people, the first two times, and they would have, part of the job was to relocate. And of course, they had probably more relevant experience than I had. But when a push came to shove, there was barriers to relocating. Their partners didn't want to relocate in both cases. But I actually wanted to move back to Ireland. My wife is Irish. We just had a child, only a few weeks old. And so this was a wonderful opportunity. And so he wasn't hiring. I think he was left with no choice. Okay. I think there was other considerations. And you're right. So when you talk about, depends on the growth stage of the company. And then there's these other factors as well, which were unique to this particular situation. However, I remember, and again, Alistair was a fantastic boss. He really was. And he told me all about accountability. He had this system where he would ask you, okay, Paul, when is that going to be delivered? Very bottom line. And give him a date just to get him off your back. And you could hear this pen in the background. He'd be writing it down, very old school, right? And he had this thing called a tickle file. And it was one of those concertina files that with by month, broken down by day. And if you said, I'll have it on the 28th for you, that your his little piece of paper would go into the 28th of that month. And that morning, his PA would come to him with a big stack of all these tickles for the day. And he'd go through them all and he'd go, okay, yep, that's here. And of course, if you hadn't delivered it, he was on the phone to you straight away. And so I just thought that kind of, and it was old school. There was no technology involved in it, but accountability doesn't require that. And I just thought it was wonderful the way he did that. He left you alone. He would say whatever date it's going to be. He would never ask you how's it going or anything else. If you needed his support, he would always be there. But if he had said you would deliver it by a certain day, that was it. And it was black and white. And there was no excuses tolerated. I could say, yeah, but didn't Paul, you said you'd have it. And I love that black and white accountability. And it's a real sales leadership skill. I'm not good at it myself, even though I experienced it. But here's the other thing. Sorry, this is the reason where I wanted to go with this question. Was I remember one day he came over to Dublin to see me. And he had this little round badge on his jacket. And it had MOM written on it. M-O-M. He said, Alistair, is there something you want to tell me? And what had happened was he had been on this Motorola training course, which is manager of managers. Mm. And I often wondered, and I wanted to get your take on it, is managing other managers different than managing salespeople?
I used to think that that would be a huge leap in terms of my leadership capability and something that I was probably not concerned about, but conscious, very conscious about. I think that the same rules apply to leadership, Paul, and that is, for me, I am genuinely, I define success very, very straightforward in sales, and it applies across the board, regardless of who I'm working with. And as I said, I think I said it already, but it's about delighting our customers, and by doing that, we can deliver revenue for the business. And then the second piece, and probably the most important piece, is that we are constantly looking at ways to transform our talent. And if we can do that, if we can keep them engaged, we've talked a lot about this, create loyalty, then, and helping them think about their long-term career and how what they're doing right now is a big part of that, then we can get the best out of those people. And the same rules apply, Paul, from managing a salesperson to a sales leader. It's just that where they are in that journey is slightly different. So I'm very fortunate to work with great people. Two of my managers are experienced managers. One person was a promotion from an AE, and then I've just hired a very experienced sales leader. And so the requirements are different, but ultimately what you're trying to achieve is the same thing. So I know that probably sounds like a pretty simple answer, but I don't think anything really changes. It's just that you have different priorities, but ultimately you're working towards this longer term objective. Mm.
So what I'm hearing is really that you're managing humans, and humans have all the same basic needs, and you're managing to, you're protecting their self-esteem, their self-worth, their value as humans. You're also then helping them discover how they can grow within their own particular roles, but as humans, as individuals as well. And it doesn't matter what their role is, that it's the human need to contribute, to be significant, that matters most.
Exactly. And if I'm doing my job right as a hiring manager, Paul, they're the types of people that I'm bringing into the business, and they understand what they're getting from us as well as from me, and vice versa. And so, yeah, you're right. We're all humans at the end of the day, and we're pretty simple people more often than not.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, Jack, we are almost up on time here. We've only got 3 minutes left. I wanted to ask you before I let you go, if you were writing your own epitaph, what would it say about you?
I suppose this is probably easy to answer given what we've just talked about over the last hour. A loving father who is determined to help transform the people around him to give them a better life than they could have imagined. Something like that.
That seems like a really great place to leave this, Jack. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been a joy, absolute joy listening to you. If you have enjoyed listening to Jack as much as I have enjoyed it, please consider leaving the podcast a review. Would really help us out and would appreciate it. Thank you so much for being my guest today, Jack Hanratty.
Thank you, Paul. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure.